shadow committee before this year, but let me welcome all members back, because many of you were not at the first meeting. I hope you all, I know it's a wishful thinking, but I hope you all had a bit of time to have a rest. This year is going to be a very, very busy year for this committee, especially in light of the number of pieces of legislation that will come before the committee. We also know that normally the year before elections is a short parliament year, and it will require of us as members dedication and commitment to deal with intricate pieces of legislation in a committed way. I have no doubt, however, that that is what this committee will do. It's always been the style of this committee and of its members. So we are looking forward to that. Members, it is our first meeting, I think it's also important that we relay our congratulations to SAPS for a successful festive season program, for the rest that they've made. And I think as a committee that deals with safety and security of our people, we will fail in our responsibilities also not to raise our deep felt condolences to the victim of rape. You know, this government's priority for crime fighting is crimes against women and children. But the fact of the matter is, as a committee that deals with police, we know that the police come in after the fact when rape is committed. That it is very difficult for the police to prevent rape. But it does not take away from our responsibility to look at what it is that make our nation such a violent nation, what it is that make our men not defend and protect our women. And we will have a discussion as a committee at some point and how to deal with it and what we would like to do around this and what initiatives this committee would like to take, together also with the other committees that deals with the justice system and with the Committee on Women and Children. While one victim has become the public face of rape, we cannot deny that there are many, many more that we don't even know or read about. And while the public outcry has been one of the violent nature in which this rape has been committed, the truth of the matter is, rape in its simplest sense is a form of violence. And before we do not acknowledge that, and as a country and as a community and as a nation, take responsibility and do not wait for any one organization or institution to provide us with the solutions, we will not make progress on that. Members, we are here today. The Minister is introducing the Dangerous Weapons Bill to the committee, and the program will look as follows. We will start with the Minister's introduction. Thereafter, we will give the Secretariat of Police an opportunity to take us through the bill. Thereafter, the researchers from Parliament will take us through the evaluation also of the public submissions that have been received and of their own evaluation of the bill. Next week, we will start with the public hearings on this bill. We have for a long time only received a few submissions, and then last Thursday, Friday, we started to get far more submissions. Members will receive those submissions by the end of the day. Mr. Lobby must take notice of where he can take it personally to each member so that we don't put it in your pigeonholes, because then it also gets lost. So, or it takes too long to reach you, so he will arrange with you. You can tell him where he needs to take it so that you can have it. And I urge members please to go through those public submissions so that when we start next week with the public hearings that we are on par of what their opinions are. Minister, without further ado, I'll hand over to yourself. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to you and the committee members here present, the Secretary for Civilians, the Secretary for Police, Civilian Secretary, must say that we taken a path of transforming even the subject itself. Different arms of staff, different units and divisions to ensure that we are in line with the whole transformation project unfolding in our country. And there are particular things that we've raised earlier on this year. We had to call the top 1,500 subs management, starting from station commanders, cluster commanders, provincial commissioners, and national commissioner with the team. In the main, emphasizing the point that the kind of subs which has to prevail in the country is the one underpinned by transparency, underpinned by accountability, and upholds and executes its mandate in accordance with the constitution, legislation, and the needs of the community. We must say then that in the context of the bill in front of us today, we should record some concerns, particularly when there are clashes between the police and the public. In instances where there are protests, whether self-delivery protests or any other protests, in that sense, we would always be worried in such, because we need this partnership. But at the same time, we also emphasize the point that everybody should be upright, including members of SAPS, including members of the public as well. So this morning we are here to present to you as the portfolio committee the amendment on the bill, the dangerous weapons bill. And we must say that we do have the actors, as I said already, which exist in our province. There are, however, also similar pieces of legislation, similar to this one, the Dangerous Weapons Act, which still exist or are in force in what was referred to as TPVC state, if you still remember, Transkei, and so on. That these different pieces of legislation, they remain in force until they are repealed, as we said. What therefore exists are different pieces of legislation affecting different parts of the country based on the old act. Since South Africa became a united unitary state, and the incorporation of TPVC state, the Dangerous Weapons Act, that applies to South Africa was not rationalized to be applicable to the former TPVC state as a single piece of legislation under new circumstances. The Dangerous Weapons Act of the former TPVC state have not as yet been repealed. The courts have pointed out this deficit, that it is not legally permissible to have different standards of legislation for different parts of the country in one united unitary South Africa. The sentencing regimes also is another area where such acts apply differently in terms of the processes of sentencing. There is a case in point from the Constitutional Court which ruled in the case of S. Ntunzi versus S. Mlonzi, the case CCT 8109, which is known as Ntunzi case, on the different sentencing regimes of the different parts of the country, and held that the Dangerous Weapons Act of South Africa needs to be harmonized into a single piece of national legislation for general application. The draft bill on dangerous weapons is therefore an attempt to harmonize historical legislation and has also drawn on the best practices in other countries. must be pointed out that there already exists other legislation that outlaw the carrying of dangerous weapons, and that which is defined as dangerous weapon in broad terms. So the principal act here talks to the dangerous weapons and our understanding of such, and that's the base which then takes us to the next step of rationalizing all these others from the formative peace stage. What does this peace seek to do? What mischief are we trying to cure? One, is there a peace and substitute all existing legislation, regulation, dangerous weapons in the Republic with a single set of legislation in that regard, applicable to the country as a whole? Secondly, to provide for uniform legislation that will apply throughout the Republic, because we no longer have those things called CBCC states now. We have one state. Three, prohibit the possession of dangerous weapons, firearms, or replica in public. And fourth, subject to any exceptions, prohibit the carrying of firearms and objects which resemble firearms, dangerous weapons and objects likely to cause injury or damage to property at a demonstration or gathering. What the new bill seeks to do is not to prevent people from carrying items like pepper spray, as it has been reported in the media, but rather an attempt to harmonize our approach, as we said, of this act into a single piece of legislation. Under the bill, the Minister of Police is empowered to publish in government notices regarding what constitutes a dangerous weapon and which dangerous weapons cannot be carried in public. And I must close the chair and say that this is particularly important given the developments in the country and the apparent brandishing of weapons in public protests and public gatherings of it way. So coming at this time is in a way a reminder to all of us, one, to the Constitution, but also to the Act itself, as to how to conduct ourselves in public protests. And what kind of weapons are permissible and what is not permissible. The bill also provides for the Minister of Police to issue notices of exclusion where the carrying of what may be defined a dangerous weapon in public is excluded from being outlawed under specific circumstances. The bill provides that any person who is in possession of or carries any dangerous weapon or any replica or imitation of a firearm under circumstances which may raise a reasonable suspicion that the person intends to use the dangerous weapon for an unlawful purpose shall be guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years. The bill retains the powers of the Minister of Police to prohibit by notice in the Gazette a possession during certain time periods and at or in certain places or gatherings specified in the notice of objects specified which are, in the opinion of the Minister, dangerous weapons. We believe in the need for such a law to ensure proper and effective regulation of carrying of dangerous weapons in public. The intention of the bill is not to prohibit people, as we said, from privately possessing such weapons. This new bill takes into account constitutional principles as well as present policing needs in response.
much, Minister, for this introduction of the bill. Minister, Secretary of Police is going to take us through the detail of the bill. Minister, can I just get an indication you want to leave shortly? Or are you going to wait for the Secretary's introduction? Okay. Then I would suggest that we carry on with the Secretary of Police's introduction, and thereafter we can take questions of clarity, and either the Minister or the Secretary can respond to those issues. Thank you very much, Secretary.
Thank you, Chair, Minister, members of the Portfolio Committee. I think the Minister has outlined that this is an attempt to rationalise the pieces of legislation as required by the Constitution, by the Constitutional Court. So it wouldn't be sufficient to try and put this legislation into other pieces of legislation, because the Constitutional Court requires us to rationalise the existing legislation into a single act. But the Act looks at the bill before you, before maybe I ask General James to just take you through the technical submission itself. When we first published this bill in December 2011 for public comment as a department, we received more than 2,300 comments from members of the public. We spent quite a lengthy time then going through each and every one of those submissions. We involved the state law advisors in that process to make sure that we took on board the concerns of the public with regard to issues that the ministers raised of pepper spray and issues where the public felt that they were going to be left defenceless by the bill. So as a result, the revised bill that is before the Portfolio Committee is a result of these of taking into account those extensive submissions that were made. It's also a result of extensive consultations that have also taken place with the Justice Department, the NPA, as well as looking at international best practice. And before General Jacobs just takes you through the details of the bill, just to say that we're looking at four key aspects of the bill. The one is the issue of the carrying of dangerous weapons in public generally, and General Jacobs will explain how we have limited that carrying of dangerous weapons, whereas in the first draft that was published in 2011, it was too broad and the public were concerned about that. We have limited that. However, at public gatherings, we have extended it to include any object that may be used as a weapon. And then we've also looked at the issue of replica firearms. But what the bill also does is to make provision for the minister to pass by notice that certain events that are cultural or religious events, then the carrying of such weapons would be allowed, even though it may be a public gathering, but that would be issued by notice of the minister. So I'll hand over to General Jacobs, and he can just take you through the clause by clause and the background to the bill.
General Jacobs.
Thank you, Chair, and please excuse me if I overlap a bit with what the minister has said, but unfortunately that's the way how the presentation has been put together. The Minister has already mentioned that the rationalisation of this Act follows the judgment in the Tunzi-Mulanzi case. The court in that case declared the applicability specifically of Section 4 of the Dangerous Weapons Act in the Transkei region unconstitutional and referred the matter to the Constitutional Court for confirmation. In terms of the Section 4, provision is made for the imposition of minimum sentences which are applicable to offences involving dangerous weapons and are committed in an area to which the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development has made sentences applicable. On the 1st of August 2010, the Constitutional Court declared the government notice published in the Gazette inconsistent with the Constitution and hence invalid. The Constitutional Court then set the government notice aside, and in terms of the government notice which was made applicable to the Transkei, it was then withdrawn on the 10th of November 2010. In other words, the Minister of Justice has already complied with that part of the judgment made by the Constitutional Court. But Chair, as the Minister has indicated, that the Court did make an observation that it is necessary to rationalise the present different sets of legislation that's applicable in the various parts of the country as it was constituted before 1994. we should note that the Constitutional Court did not declare the contents of the rest of the Act as being unconstitutional, except for the notice regarding resentencing. However, we realize that the Act was adopted in 1968 and it was important to review the contents thereof in terms of present needs of the community and policing. Chair, if one would look at the present Act, you will find this, I would say you could also almost relate it to a reverse onus, where the courts have actually interpreted the Act to give a sensible interpretation to it, but if you read the Act as it is, it boils down to a reverse onus. The Constitutional Court required the Speaker of the National Assembly, the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, and the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development to notify the Court of the legislative steps taken in fulfillment of the above. The Court was informed of the process and the legislation has been introduced, Chair. Chair, the Dangerous Weapons Act was found to be outdated and this necessitated the drafting of the bill. The bill takes into account the constitutional principles as well as present policing needs in respect of the possession and carrying of dangerous weapons. I think we all accept that dangerous weapons account for a huge number of violent crimes committed in the country. It should however be kept in mind that this is in essence not the use of a weapon in an offence that needs to be addressed, as these are already criminalised through offences such as assault, attempted murder, etc. And the use of a weapon to cause wounds are taken into account in the sentencing of an offender. The Act needs to address the mere carrying of or possession of a weapon under circumstances which indicate that the dangerous weapon is intended to be used for the commission of an offence. Chair, if one would look at the notices that were issued in the past, I think the last were issued by Minister Ufumadi and Minister Hannes Krim, you will find that it's a very wide range of even household articles and implements that you use for gardening. In one of the notices, even a tire is still listed as a dangerous weapon. And I think what we need to address is really the intention, what the person need to do, and not specifically the object so much. So what we try to do is to address that issue through this draft legislation. So the bill seeks to repeal and substitute all existing legislation regulating dangerous weapons in the Republic with a single piece of legislation that is applicable to the country as a whole. Secondly, to provide for uniform legislation that will apply throughout the Republic, to prohibit the possession of dangerous weapons, firearms or replicas or imitation firearms in public with the intention to use it for an unlawful purpose. Of course, Chair, when we look at the bill, you will see that there might be circumstances where the bill might apply not specifically in public. You will realize if you arrest a person who is unlawfully trespassing, etc., that it might be on a public property, but the Act will apply in those circumstances as well. Subject to certain exceptions to prohibit the carrying of firearms and objects which resemble firearms, dangerous weapons and objects likely to cause injury or damage to property at a demonstration or gathering. As the Minister has indicated, the Constitution guarantees unarmed protest and unarmed demonstrations, and for that reason the legislation must give effect to what the Constitution requires. The bill was drafted by taking into account that it must not duplicate what is addressed in other laws. For example, the Firearms Control Act 2000 allows for the carrying under certain circumstances of a licensed firearm in public. The Constitution guarantees peaceful and unarmed protest. The Firearms Control Act does not regulate the carrying of a firearm during public gatherings and protest. Whilst in terms of the Dangerous Weapons Act 1968, there is a cross-referencing and regulation of the same. It was found that it would be more user-friendly to amend the Regulation of Gatherings Act, as the requirement regarding the carrying of weapons during public gatherings was regarded as being more strict than the mere possession, similar to the possession of a firearm in terms of the Firearms Control Act. It was regarded more user-friendly to include the prohibition regarding the carrying of dangerous weapons in the Regulation of Gatherings Act, rather than only the cross-referencing that's presently in the Regulation of Gatherings Act. Furthermore, Chair, the South African Schools Act 1996 provides for a prohibition of any dangerous object including knives and firearms at the school premises, making it unnecessary to have other specific legislation addressing schools, although the bill, if and once enacted, will automatically apply to schools as well. Chair, I can just mention, when we looked at the issue of firearm-free zones, we had very intensive interaction with the Department of Education, and they indicated from that department at the time that they would rather want to address that type of issue through the Schools Act and Schools Regulations. And that is why that notice has been issued by the Minister of Education at the time. But as I've said, this Act is not really superseded by that. In other words, if a child would possess a dangerous weapon within the context of this Act, it could be an offence as well. But I think the object with the school's regulations was in order to have, like I can say, searches, etc. at schools, in order to address those issues at schools. So I think there will be a bit of an overlap. It depends, and once again, with children, it would depend on the age of the child, etc., on whether an offence is being committed. Chair, the definition in this regard is limited, that's in respect of the general prohibition on the carrying of dangerous weapons. Any object other than a firearm designed as a weapon and capable of producing death or serious bodily harm. I believe we might have to look in the whole process at the definition and make sure that we actually capture exactly what we need to capture. Once again, taking into account that we think that the previous notices actually were too wide and that we need to capture that. The possession and carrying of an unlicensed firearm is criminalized in terms of the Firearms Control Act. The definition of dangerous weapon in the Act is very wide. The notices enables the Minister to even extend the ambit of the Act. The present notices, and the Minister referred to notices, and those are notices in terms of the present Act, prohibits basically any item, and was severely criticized as they could include, for example, a tire, a spade, and various other garden tools. The present Act implies that a person needed to prove his or her innocence in court. Should a person use any of those items in an offense such as an assault, it would in any event be criminalized. The Act therefore intends to criminalize the carrying of items that have been manufactured as weapons and capable of causing death or serious bodily harm. A large number of persons, for example, made submissions that pepper spray is being carried for self-defense purposes, and this prohibition is not intended to address such items, as the Minister has already mentioned. The prohibition is linked to circumstances which would raise a reasonable suspicion that the dangerous weapon is possessed or carried with the intention to use it for an unlawful purpose. Chair, we've already referred to the definition of dangerous weapon. Clause 2.1 prohibits the possession of dangerous weapons, firearms or replicas or imitation firearms, and provides that any person who is in possession of any dangerous weapon or any firearm, replica or imitation firearm, under circumstances which may raise a reasonable suspicion that the person intends to use the dangerous weapon, firearm, replica or imitation firearm for unlawful purposes, and guilty of an offence. Chair, what we also tried to do, and in the first round of consultation, we received a lot of submissions in this regard, that regarding the discretion that must be exercised by the police officer on the ground. And it was very clearly said that we must give clear guidelines to the police officer in terms of how to exercise this discretion in order to prevent unlawful arrest, etc. So clause 2.2 provides for factors which must be taken into account in determining whether a person intends to use the dangerous weapon, firearm, replica or imitation firearm for an unlawful purpose. These factors are the following, and it's not a closed list. The place and time where the person is found in possession. Is it during the night? Is it on a private property? Is it in a place where crime is rife, especially after hours? The general behavior of the person, including the making of any threat or displaying intimidatory behavior, the manner in which the dangerous weapon, firearm, replica or imitation firearm is carried or displayed, whether the possession of the dangerous weapon, firearm, replica, or imitation firearm was within the context of drug dealing, gang association, or any organized crime activity, or E, whether the person in whose possession the dangerous weapon, firearm, replica, or imitation firearm was found was at the time part of a group of persons who were also in possession of dangerous weapons, firearms, replicas, or imitation firearms. Check clause 4 amends the Regulation of Gatherings Act in order to provide for prohibition on the possession of air guns, firearms, imitation firearms, muzzle-loading firearms, or any object which resembles a firearm that is likely to be mistaken for a firearm, and any dangerous weapon or other object likely to cause injury to a person at the gathering or demonstration. The prohibition in the bill is in line with the Constitution on the carrying of any weapon, and we want to emphasize by a participant. In other words, if there are law enforcers, etc., who are not participants to the gathering, they would not be captured by this prohibition. During an assembly or gathering, demonstration, and picketing. The bill, however, does not affect the possession of and carrying of a licensed firearm in the prescribed manner under other circumstances. And Chair, I think that's the main difference. You are allowed to carry a licensed firearm, but during a gathering or demonstration, you will not be allowed because the Constitution has a prohibition on having armed demonstrations. The possession of dangerous weapons, including firearms, during gatherings and demonstrations is prohibited in line with the Constitution. Exceptions which may be allowed under certain circumstances are in respect of cultural, religious purposes and historical enactments. In many instances they have like the World War enactments, etc., but in those cases the necessary permission will have to be acquired beforehand, and it should be in line with the exception that's been granted. In the Dangerous Weapons Act of 1968, the Minister of Police is empowered to prohibit the manufacture or sale or supply of dangerous weapons. This provision was, however, never used since 1968, and one of the main criticisms against the bill was the wide powers of the Minister of Police. This section has therefore not been again taken up in the bill. Chair, in terms of the process, there was already mention of the first publication of the bill quite some time ago and the 2,300 comments that we've received. It was very, I must say, very few pieces of legislation we had that lively type of interaction. Although, I must say a lot, and it's a huge number of the 2,300, was just, I don't want to say an emotional, they were really very, very good submissions, but they were just, that said, the opposable full stop. But we appreciate all the comments, and I think it contributed to the whole process where we ended up with a bill that I think is acceptable in terms of the Constitution. Chair, in terms of the process, once we received the comments, we handed it over to the state law advisors, and we went through an intensive process with the state law advisors. And I actually want to give them credit that the present draft that we have, I would say, is 90% with their input, or even more. After we finalized the draft with the state law advisors, we also consulted with the National Prosecuting Authority, and some ideas were also inserted on the insistence. Chair, regarding the financial implications, of course we will have, like with any other piece of legislation, we will have to have training, etc., but there are no other costs involved in terms of gatherings. The whole system of determining conditions and regulating gatherings, etc., is in place. This will just need some fine-tuning in terms of the application of this piece of legislation. Chair, relating to the certifications by the state law advisor, it was certified that the bill must be dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by Section 75 of the Constitution, since it contains no provision to which the procedure set out in Section 74 or 76 of the Constitution applies. It was also found by the state law advisors that it is not necessary to refer the bill to the House of Traditional Leaders in terms of Section 18.1A of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, as it does not contain provisions pertaining to customary law or customs of traditional communities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. members, I'm going to open up for questions of clarity. We're still going to take the committee researchers, also going to take us through the evaluation of the bill, but also the submissions. But I'm going to allow now that we open for questions of clarity to either the Minister or the Secretary of Police or the Department. Ms. Kodabana, Ms. Bia, Mr. Groenewald, and Reverend Law in that, and Ms. Rupati in that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just would like some clarification on the term gathering. There don't seem to be, there presumably are definitions in the full bill, this is an amendment, but that term, it could be a gathering of people who've just played paintball and they're standing around sharing a Coke. Is that now illegal because they have these weapons in their hands? Is it a gathering? Or you have three people who practice with ceremonial swords on the beach doing kung fu, practicing their cutters. Is that a gathering? Is that now illegal? Are they going to be arrested for carrying weapons? You see what I'm saying? I'm looking at the term gathering. Does it mean a march, a protest? I don't know. Perhaps we can just, someone could clarify that particular word for me, because it's ringing warning bells in my head considering all the outrage we had at the original one. Thank you.
Can I ask that you note the questions, please? Secretary? Can I ask that you note the questions? We'll take the answers at the end. Ms. Beyond?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on gatherings. What about weddings? Because people sometimes carry weapons like Nokiri, Mahau, during Memulo. How are we going to stop?
Thank you, Chairperson. I know that we can only ask questions about clarity. I want to ask the Honourable Minister firstly. He said that we have to ensure that when there's public gatherings that the people are unarmed, which I completely support. But I want to know, Chairperson, the present Public Gatherings Act is giving the Minister all the powers to ensure any public gathering that people do not carry any weapons. So there is present legislation that can be used. I understand the Constitutional Court case. The way I interpreted it, there should only be one clause in here, and that is the repealing of this act, because there are other acts. The second thing is, Chairperson, I am very worried that this piece of legislation is going to become an instrument in some misuse by members of the police services to arrest people unlawfully. I heard what General Jacobs has said, but that's not good enough to say that these circumstances, they are very wide. In Afrikaans we say, so wijs is die eerste genade. The interpretation of that is, I want to make the statement that this is going to be misused to arrest people. Thirdly, Chairperson, I'd like to know from the Minister, if the idea is to prohibit people carrying firearms in a public gathering, shouldn't the focus be on the gatherings as such, and not the focus trying to describe the weapons? Because I can tell you, you will not be able to describe all the weapons. As said, even referred to tires. If we go back to the originality of the act, it was to control, riot control, and to prevent people from having necklaces. That is coming from the apartheid era. Preventing people to commit necklaces. That is why a tire was also mentioned as a dangerous weapon. Now, are we really trying to go back to that? And I don't want to go into the definition of a dangerous weapon. It's really, really too wide. So my question is, why can't we just scrap this piece of legislation and use a legislation that is already existing, like, for instance, the Public Gatherings Act?
stuff that is not designed as well, but there are objects that can cause what you have.
And then the second one related to this, it says there is a prohibition in the bill in line with the Constitution on the carrying of any weapon. Now what difference would it make if, rather than use the word carrying of any weapon, you say any object that might cause serious bodily harm? Because to me it looks like we are limiting ourselves, or we are creating loopholes when we only talk about weapons. And yet, when the people in the demonstration are carrying bricks, for example, those bricks are not designed as weapons, but they do destroy assets, properties, cars, and so on. So when a person carries bricks during a demonstration, where which clause can count the person or prohibit the person from carrying a brick when they are in a demonstration?
On
trouble?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to come on exceptions. On exception, Chairperson, we talk about cultural, religious, and historical impediments. I wonder if you can define that. You see, why I'm asking this question is because from Nomkos Umklangala Papagit, Spakamakau, Ane Waparat, and so on and so forth. Is that exceptional for this case? If there is a Mkosi, Wenkosi, Mshala on the 24th of September, Patamahao, Ane, Kwa Parati, Ane, Kwa Parati, Mkavel, and this is a Sako, and I'm sure you will understand what I'm talking about. Is that exceptional? You ladies are wearing shoes that have 3 inches high. Is that dangerous or exceptional? I'm asking these things because when we define exceptions, we must know what we are talking about. So it will, and all of us will be in the same level and understanding exactly what we are talking about. The people of the Baptist Church, Kwashembe and the Isayoni, they always carry sticks when they go to their religious gatherings. Is that exceptional? I'm asking this thing so that we mustn't be seen as if we are saying people must tend to be something else when they are something else. We mustn't try to create other people when they know exactly what they want to do. That's a question that I want to raise, Chair. Thanks.
The 3 inches heels is only dangerous to our own health. Ms. Mulabati?
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is on the... It is there to General Jacobs. Is there going to be an additional training on the part of the police officers to implement the amendment? And somewhere in the bill, the top of a sentence, a 3 sentence, it is insufficient. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. I also have just two short questions that I would like to ask and then a comment that I would like to make, and I would like to start with the comment. The Honourable Mulambat says it's touching on an important point, though even though you say that the department in the bill says that it will be, there won't be extra cost to the department. We need a roll-out plan, an implementation plan on this bill before we will adopt this bill, as well as its practice, which must include those aspects of training, etc., and surely that's going to have financial implications as well. So we will definitely need to get that, and I'm urging the department to work on it while we are dealing with the bill. The two questions that I have, the one is, I do not quite understand, and I would like General Jacobs just to explain to me the reasoning around the carrying of firearms. And here we talk about legal firearms, licensed firearms, because that is, in my mind, is the Firearms Control Act. Why are we creating a possibility here that a person under certain circumstances cannot be carrying illegal firearms? Obviously, when it's a firearm-free zone, etc., etc., all that comes into play, but that's dealt with within the Firearms Act. I just want to get clarity on that, because I think that is one of the concerns that we're most probably going to get from the public as well. The second question that I have is more a question that, in order so that we can maybe understand the effect of the bill before us as well. Over the weekend, there was reports of an incident, alleged incident in Mpumalanga, where a taxi was basically, and its occupants were under fire of paintball guns, rubber bullets, etc., from members of the public. How would this bill impact on that incident? So if you could just practically give us an example on that so that we can understand maybe the content of the bill better. With that, over to the Minister and the Department. Ms. Kulubana, a short one, please.
I just wanted to ask if this addresses the issue of the selling. It prohibits the carrying of exact replicas. Does it deal with the selling of them?
Selling. In the same breath, manufacturing. Over to the Department and the Minister.
To be observed. So, if are not introducing a new act. Acts are there. We are doing a specific purpose. This is for a specific purpose of having one act and harmonizing everything under the act itself.
Secretary, over to you. Can I maybe just respond to the Bishop's question first of all? We've limited to being manufactured as a weapon when it comes to a person who's not part of a gathering. When it comes to a gathering, it's any object. So it could include a brick. So we broaden the definition of what constitutes a dangerous weapon in a gathering situation. So if there's a public gathering, a bottle, a brick, anything that could be used for bodily harm can constitute a dangerous weapon. But when it comes to a non-gathering, that's when we've limited it to something that is manufactured as a weapon. So that you don't have somebody on the side of their pavement with a hoe that gets arrested because they've got a hoe. So there's a distinction in the act between a gathering, where any object can constitute a dangerous weapon, and a non-gathering situation, where we've limited that. I think also the issue of what was raised about weddings, etc. I think we shouldn't be too specific about saying wanting to tie down what are exceptions. We've broadly said cultural, religious, historical. Therefore, that becomes a catch-all for the events that Dhamma Dhruva was talking about. If we were to limit them, we might find that we're excluding certain events. So in those events, permission could be granted to carry the weapons if it was in those sorts of events and in the events that we spoke about at Memorial, etc. And then I think I'm going to ask General Jacobs to deal with the issue of carrying a firearm at public gatherings, the and some of the technical issues that were raised, including the issue of what happened in the Mpumalanga, because that would now fall within this act. But General Jacobs can just deal with some of the technical answers.
Just before you answer to General Jacobs, the question was not related to carrying off a firearm at a public gathering. The question was related to the other references. So I just want to correct what the Secretary said there. That was the question was, why do we need to include a firearm in this case? And I just see is that the follow-up question or...
I'm not sure that the question that you clarified.
Can I ask that we just give General Jacobs opportunity to answer, because he might be answering the questions that you are still waiting for, and then we will take a round of follow-up questions. General?
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can just refer back to the definition of gathering as well. The Minister has quite rightly referred to the definition in the Gatherings Act. But if you read the whole definition, you will see that the gathering as defined in the Gatherings Act refers specifically to what we would term as protest gatherings. And in other words, it's just not simply a gathering. It's a gathering that's focused on protest. To form pressure groups, to hand over petitions and against a political party or political organization, etc., etc. And I think that puts another angle on the interpretation. Chair, on the I think a lot of the issues have been answered. I think I will first go to the issue of the definition and the relationship with the Firearms Act. It was specifically in our interaction with the NPA that they proposed that we include firearms here. But Chair, I do realize, I think what you also referred to, if you look at section 120.10 of the Firearms Control Act, it says it's an offence to be in possession of any firearm, imitation firearm or ammunition, with intent to commit an offence or to use the firearm or any imitation firearm to resist arrest or prevent the arrest of another person. I think what takes the matter a bit further in this bill is the very clear, or if I can say it is the framework which is provided to the police officer on the ground in order to determine or to look at the issue of the fear that an offence might be committed or that there's an intent to commit an offence. I think, Chair, if we take into account what you're saying, we might possibly look at maybe just amending that section of the Firearms Control Act to also link it up with these because I think it really contributes to the process of the police officer on the ground. But I take if it is said that maybe it should be addressed in the Firearms Control Act, I accept that is possible. Chair, if I can go to the issue of the financial implications and the implementation plan, it has been noted. We will give attention to that issue. The issue raised by the Honourable Mrs. Malabatsi on the sentencing. Chair, this sentence of 3 years is actually, I think, the same or in line with the sentence that the Minister of Justice actually would have instituted just for the transcribe. So we think it's in line with the general principles in the legislation. Chair, on the issue of the Mpumalanga assault, I think there's this whole argument about toy guns and a lot of these paintball guns resemble exactly like an AK-47 or whatever. But Chair, I think we were very careful of not bringing in this whole issue about toy guns and whatever. You know, it's really, to a large extent, very emotional. And if we look at the incident in Mpumalanga, if you use a paintball gun, I think you would even fall within this ambit of the section of the Firearms Control Act. It's an offence to be in possession of a firearm, imitation firearm or ammunition with intent to commit an offence. The offence they committed was assault, possibly intimidation and all that. So I really think that event is properly covered in terms of a lot of legislation. Chair, I hope I haven't left out something. I think try to cover all. And really, like the cultural and religious historical enactments, that must also be seen within the view of the definition of Regulation of Gatherings Act, the definition of regulation. Next year.
I'm going to allow Honourable Reverend Meshu and Honourable Groenewald just to ask follow-ups, and that's it. Then we need to move Honourable Malabatsi, then we need to move on to the researchers, please.
Also, for instance, at the
a resort where there's facilities to do this. So it's actually not in a private club or something like that. What is the situation going to be there? Can our police officers come in there, and if we see that there are people, it seems if they are attacking each other, say, oh, no, 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 wait, what's going on here? We arrest all of them. Do you have to apply for a permit? What is the, can she explain to me what is the situation as far as this is concerned? Thanks.
I would just like to urge the honourable member to look at page 4 of the bill in terms of the laws that have been repealed in reference to his first question. Honourable Mulabasi. Over to the Secretariat Minister. Example raises the question whether
not be included in the exceptions as well. So we must maybe just take cognizance of that, and we can discuss that when we start dealing with the bill in detail. Minister, we are going to release yourself, but before we do, I would like to ask the Honourable Mdlova on behalf of the committee just to relay a message to yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, Chairperson, I hope some who are waiting to get a major contribution now they've lost. I'm starting by saying, Chairperson, some have been invited to the Exceptional Gatherings Act. of the 16th of February 2013, roundabout here in Cape Town, where the young man from Mthethwa will increase the families of Mthethwa to be more than one. And we as a committee who works with him in this Department of Police, we want to wish him and the future bride and all families, Telezis and Tetras and all relatives of all families, a happy day on the 16th, and all their wishes to be fulfilled by the grace of God. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mdlova. Minister, if you want to leave at this point, you will be welcome to do so. I presume the Secretariat is staying behind for the presentation with the researchers. Thank you very much for your availability this morning.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the visit.
Members, it's 11 o'clock. Tea should be outside. So can we take a 10, 15 minute break and 15 minutes, quarter past 11, let's be back there.
Thank you.
that before he leaves, because we need to have a quorum for that. So can I put to you the minutes of the... The committee did last week go through it in detail, and I would like to put just the jointly the minutes of the 14th, the 21st, and the 27th of November. Can I have a mover for those minutes, for the adoption of those minutes, please? Ms. Willibati is moving. Can I have a seconder for that minute, for those minutes, please? 14th, the 21st, and the 27th of November. Can I have a seconder, please? Honourable Ndlovu seconding. Then the Northern Cape report. Have members gone through that report? You did. I put page 1. Anything on page 1? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9, page 10, page 11. Again, I've got the report. Can I have the mover for the adoption of the Northern Cape report? Honourable Sibiya is moving. Can I have a seconder for the adoption of the report? Honourable Mulabachi is seconding. Last one, members, is the CIROC report. I hope members have gone through it. Again, can I get an indication that members go through it? We did. Again, I'm just going to put the pages to you. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7, page 8, just a general comment from my side, can you please either use the percentage symbol or the word percentage, because we're using both of them throughout the report. Page 8, page 9, page 10, which page were you on? Page 10? Ethics Hotline? So just use the word, the Ethics Hotline, capitals throughout that paragraph, please. And then also PWC in the middle of the page. Got to be capital letters, the second paragraph, capital letters, PWC. And that higher apps also, and also the spelling of the off, just correct that. Page 11, page 12, page 13, page 14. Members, can I have a mover for this, please, for the adoption of the CIRA report? Honourable Kulabana is moving, a seconder. Honourable Sibiya is seconding. Thank you very much. Members, the minutes was done by the secretary thank you very much. Thank you very much, members, for that. Can we then hand over to Nicolette to take us through the researchers' presentation on the Dangerous Weapons Bill and also on the public comments that have been received. Thank you.
Designed to create doubt in terms of who is the designer thereof.
guns really does resemble very closely to a like the United Kingdom, United States of America, the New South Wales Government, Australia, and have quite extensive schedule prohibiting the sale of explicitly violent, explicitly dangerous weapons. We try to find out that dangerous weapons are the same, and that it has no other use in making heavy death or serious body harm. And these schedules include weapons like knuckle dusters, switchblades, butterfly knives, and ninja stars. Most of these items are used in martial arts, and they are, but the list of scheduled items is really extensive and it's used a lot. Australia has a very far-reaching schedule of prohibited items. It includes 43 items, like the above, but also includes items like silencers, spear guns, slingshots, and handguns. In Australia, for example, it's very difficult to import high-risk weapons like knuckle dusters, and must have a legitimate end use, like distribution to the army or police forces of Australia. These countries also exclude certain weapons, like pocket knives with a blade length of less than 7.62 centimeters. This will be like a fifth arm knife or 11. But the bill or the legislation also makes very clear that even though these knives are excluded, when they are used in an attack or intimidatory behavior, it will be considered a dangerous weapon. Asian countries like Singapore are far more strict. You are prohibited from owning or carrying any dangerous weapon. And that is based on the law on the excessive use of power, so that if someone attacks you with the fist and you respond to an accident, you will be liable for conviction. So they are really very interesting. Even though the dangerous weapons bill does not include school safety, it does. The bill does pose a potential for the committee to look at school safety to some degree. The 2001 regulation for safety measures at public schools declared all public schools dangerous object free zones. According to the regulations for safety measures at public schools, a dangerous weapon means any explosive material or device, any firearm or gas weapon, any article, object, or instrument which may be employed to cause bodily harm to a person or to render a person temporarily paralyzed or unconscious, or to cause damage to property, or any object which the minister may have noticed in the gazette declared to be a dangerous object for the purposes of the regulation, unless such objects are used for educational purposes. The problem with the regulation is that it excludes all other institutions of learning, like private schools. And the legislation in the United Kingdom, for example, prohibits the sale of dangerous weapons, especially knives, to persons under the age of 18. The committee could consider following similar course in scheduling in the Act that sale of especially knives to minors would be a criminal offense. I'm just going to quickly touch on the summary of written submissions to the Police Crime Committee. We received over 35 written submissions on the vote, which also included the petition to stop the vote. The petition has 692 signatures,
I think mine is very related to what Honorable Lovell said. officer may well shoot that person and say, well, they obviously had an intention to do something with that toy firearm, gun, whatever it may be. It's as though we're expecting the police to be mind readers. And I think one might find this is going to be a reaction to that. I don't know if it can be reworded or made stronger in some way, or if it in fact relates to some other bill and legislation that's already been passed. But it's just, you know, the determination of whether or not a person is going to do something in the future is, I think, legally problematic. Thank you.
I'm going to give the department an opportunity to respond to this, but I would like to Honourable Mulabati before I...
I'm sorry, Chairperson. My question sounds quite silly. Is a silencer a weapon or an accessory to a weapon? Thank you.
Sorry, can you just repeat that? Yeah, I think it's dealt with under the Firearms Act, but I'll give General Jacobs an opportunity to respond to that. Members, I think what the issues that we do have concerns about, it lies within this committee to come up with suggestions when we start dealing clause by clause with it. What we're trying to achieve now is to inform ourselves about the content and about the concerns raised so that next week when we engage with the public that we have that. And for instance, the point raised by Honourable Kulabana is a valid point. It's a point of concern. And the irony is that it's a point of concern because people are starting to doubt the ability of the police to make these calls. And that's why the training aspect of this act becomes so important. And the implementation of it becomes so important, because otherwise we in the same situation as we are with the DBA. We know that the DBA has been on the books for how many years and still staffs fail to know how and when to implement it. And so I want to have the department's understanding in this as well, that members are raising this as a concern because of experience in terms of other pieces of legislation. So it's sad that that's the case, but I think it doesn't help us to ignore the reality of it. And if we can strengthen that as a committee, we need to apply our minds in how to do that, and the same goes for the department. But I also think the department is correct in terms of intent. Surely, I would like to see, I'm not going to speak on behalf of other members, but I would like to see if the police comes across a person within my personal space in my yard with, even if it's a spade, at 3 o'clock in the morning, that person can be arrested with the intention of going to commit a crime and carrying a dangerous weapon. And that's the reality, unfortunately, on the other side of the crime situation in our country. So we need to balance these two. I think that's the challenge that we as a committee will have to engage in once we start with dealing with the legislation. So let me give an opportunity to the department to react. Secretary, over to you.
Just two things, and then I'll ask General Jacobs to respond. I think we raised that silences are dealt with in the Firearms Control Act, and muzzle loaders, the issue around muzzle loaders has been brought in with the amendment to the Firearms Control Act that was raised by the researcher. I wanted to just raise the issue of striking. It is covered under the Legal Gatherings Act. If you look at the definition and the Legal Gatherings Act, it's not just government or government institutions, it's any public body, institution, etc. So it does cover strike action.
Yes.
But just for people to be aware, we are looking at the Gatherings Act anyway. But currently, strikes are not excluded under the Gatherings Act. But we are looking at reviewing the Gatherings Act as a separate process. And maybe more emphasis needs to be placed, which says including strikes. So the emphasis is there when we do bring them in into that act. But currently, they are there. They are covered. Strike action is covered. The other issue I just wanted to raise is that, I mean, I absolutely hear chairperson saying there's the concerns of the false arrests and whatever, and then there's the concerns of criminality. You know, I think all of that relates to every piece of legislation. It isn't just the Dangerous Weapons Act, because reasonable ground is actually a legal term where the court can actually measure would a reasonable police officer in that situation have thought this is what. So when one looks at the test that is in court, that the courts make, it's the question of would a reasonable person, and in the case of a police officer, would a reasonable police officer have responded in this manner to that situation? And if the courts find that no, it was unreasonable for the police to have responded in that manner, then the police officers are guilty of an unlawful action. So for me, the issue is training not just around the Dangerous Weapons Act, but training around how to make an arrest, when to use of force, all those sorts of things that the Dangerous Weapons Act in itself won't solve. Yes, we need training specifically on the act, but the use of the term reasonable grounds is actually a legal term by which the courts measure whether somebody's actions were reasonable or not. So I think the problem is that people are raising in the submissions and the portfolio committee relates more to the issue of we need better training of police, whether it's on the Dangerous Weapons Act or whether it's on general arrest, when to use force, all that sort of thing. And I'm not sure that the Dangerous Weapons Act alone will solve that.
Thank you, Chair. I think it was clear from the presentation that was made that we did look a lot to foreign legislation when we drafted even the first bill. And that's where the clause that it cannot be included for purpose of self-defense came from. But, Chair, I believe that, especially when it comes to the definition, we can really look at the presentation and the three categories. Because I think at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter what is the object that the person has. It matters what is the intention. And I think we can have a conclusive definition as long as we can capture the discretion-making part that, as the Secretary said, that is always a concern. And if I look at the Australian legislation, especially the state of Victoria, there is an inclusion of a lawful excuse. And it says that a lawful excuse includes the pursuit of any lawful employment, duty or activity, the participation in any lawful sport, recreation or entertainment, and the legitimate collection, display or exhibition of weapons. So if we include a clause like that together what is expected from the police officer, I think it even gives more guidance to the police officer on how to exercise his or her discretion. So, Chair, I definitely think there are some issues that really can guide us. I want to be very careful about a list. Because, once again, you can put whatever, and I have the list here of Australian legislation. It carries on and on. And there's a lot of, I would say, dangerous weapons per definition in the South African context that you won't find in the Australian list. And all these weapons that's used in martial arts and all that. So the list can go on and on and on. But the question is, whether it's a brick, whether it's a knife, what is the intention with which that person is using it? And I think if we can capture that, is to me the essence of this legislation. It must be clear that the person intends to use this object for an unlawful purpose. And once again, we don't want to add to existing offences. If the person commits an assault, it's an assault. If he commits murder or attempted murder, it's included in that. But where you find a person in the street with a dangerous weapon and it's clear, the person might be shouting not to a specific person or whatever, but you can see the whole, the person is aggressive. And I found that the person walking in the street with a bottle, and he's not endangering one specific person. But you know, the first person that is going to get a quarrel with is drunk, is going to stab in the bottle. So I really think we need to address this in terms of the concerns of the public as well. And I know there was a public outcry at one stage about the bill. But I also think the public itself need to be protected, especially in public places. We had the cases in schools, and I know we're not dealing specifically with firearms, but where a person walks into a school, kill a lot of people. We have problems every day in our schools with knives, etc., being used. And I think it is something we need to, it's maybe not something that happens every day, but there needs to be a mechanism for the police in the street where this type of thing happens. But once again, as you say, the discretion must be spelled out and it must be clear also for the police officer. When does he need to act? Thank you, Chair.
I do like the suggestion of having a lawful clause in the bill, and I would urge the department to start working on a draft for us with that so that we can consider it. With other words, you know, you find, for instance, on the corner of the street, I know in Stellenbosch, you would find unemployed people gathering with the tools of their trade looking for jobs. Now, a badly trained or indiscretionary police officer and the, can actually go and arrest them. So we must try and prevent that so that we can have a balance in terms of it. But again, if I find that same person at 3 o'clock at night in my yard with an axe, surely there's something unlawful around that. So we need to balance that. So maybe the lawful excuse clause is something that we can look at. So can we ask the department start looking at that for us? Members, I just want to hear from State Law Advisors whether they would like to add anything, whether they would like to raise a concern. State Law Advisors?
Thank you, Chairperson. There's nothing we need to add at this stage, just to cover. We'll be working closely with the department in drafting that proposition.
Thank you very much for that. Parliament's legal advisors, anything from your side at this stage?
Thank you, Chair. We noted all the issues and are really discussing the possibility of that.
Thank you very much for that. Can I indicate to Parliament's legal advisors if at any point you feel that there is something that you would like to raise with the committee, just to indicate to me so that we can slot that in as well, please, because I tend to forget about it, but also you've got to protect Parliament in terms of the process going forward. So if at any point in time you want to raise something, just indicate to me. Members, I think with that, we come at the end of today's meeting. Can I just say that next week we are starting next Tuesday with the public hearings. Now, next Tuesday will be half day only because of the fact that we've got the State of the Nation debate in the afternoons. The week thereafter, we will continue with public hearings on the 19th, but it's a full day, on the 26th. It's a full day meeting. Starting at 9:30 up to 6 o'clock, we've got permission to do so, going through the sitting of Parliament. And we will continue with public submissions in the morning. And in the afternoon, we can immediately start with our own discussions on the bill. I would like to try next week, Tuesday, Department Secretary of Police, to do something a bit different in terms of it. We are going to allow the public submissions, first submission. And we were literally going to give the department 3 minutes if they feel they are something that they need to respond to on the public submission. I'm saying this specifically because we don't want to create an unnecessary situation where there's a public submission and it gets reported as fact. You want to disarm it, and this is not the intention, it's not what's going to happen, so that we can put things right at that point in time, etc. If there's nothing, don't feel obliged to say anything, but I am going to provide you with the opportunity to do it just before members start asking questions as well. And then we have provided for 15 minutes for public submissions. Submissions are not long, they're very short, the bill is short, so 15 minutes is enough, and then 15 minutes for members to ask questions so that we can deal with the public submissions effectively, but not wasting time either. Secretary, I want to close the meeting.
Just a question for clarity. That lawful and intent thing, do you want us to deal with it now so that when we present it clause by clause, we actually include that amendment in the clause?
I don't think you can start working on it. I think when we come back after the 26th, when we finish with the public submissions, we are immediately going to go clause by clause. At that point, you can then suggest to us, we suggest that this clause being slots in here. Or if there's anything else that you want to suggest at that point. I mean, the sooner we can deal with the changes, the better. I think you've already picked up that there's a lot of agreement on certain things that needs to be done. think the other thing that came out strong today is the fact that we need to look at broadening the definition to include objects with the intent to do harm or to use it in a crime, etc., in the definition itself as well. Members, I thank you very much for your attendance, and we will see. Can I just say to members, please, make sure that you have indicated to Mr. Lobby where you want your file with all the public submissions, the bill and everything, be handed over to you, so that you can prepare before next week. He's got to hand it to you before the end of the day, so if you can, before you leave, just make sure that he knows where to get hold of you. Thank you, members. Meeting is adjourned.